are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are, and on this, the 164th day of the year, Paul.
164th day?
Yeah, and in exactly 1 month to the day, which will be, of course, the 194th day of the year, we'll be celebrating the birthday of one of our two guests. Yes, plans have been made, and you and I, Paul, will be showing up at his house with plenty of booze and bags of presents. But before we get into birthdays and booze, we have some thanking to do, Paul.
Okay, I got to say, I'm a little unnerved out of the chute like that, but I'm going to find out. Hopefully, I'll find out later. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're very grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
In studio with us today are two stars not known from television, film, theater, and oddly enough, both of them owe me money. Both are not only getting ready to star together in the Blank Theater's Young Playwrights Festival, which we love, by the way, Warren Davis, an old friend of mine, and Virginia Madsen, a friend
Virginia
of mine, very
there.
Involved
yeah.
with that, at the Stellar Adler Theater in Hollywood. But they have co-starred in two landmark television series, one being from Showtime's groundbreaking, impactful, and long-running show Queer as Folk, on which he portrayed the trustworthy character of Professor Ben Bruckner. Say hello to Robert Gant.
Wow, what an intro. That was fantastic.
How are you, sir?
Very exciting. Great to be here.
Nice to have you. And speaking of folks, and we also have with us, ladies and gentlemen, the real-life guy who played star football player, student Dave Karofsky at McKinley High on the ever-popular musical dramedy Glee, which was recently renewed for two more seasons, by the way. Max Adler is in the locker room, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Max.
Hello. Hello from the locker room.
Always back in the locker room.
Were there any Queer as Folk scenes that took place in a locker room?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You have the answer.
I didn't get Showtime.
There was plenty of nudity. Oh, that's available on disc and line and everywhere else, I'm sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, plenty of
you
stuff.
See how covertly we talk.
There's locker room stuff to check
so,
out.
So go check me out in the locker room.
It's all right, good.
Before we get into the locker room, Michael, how was your week?
How was my week? Yeah. It was good. Well,
I say that's a very attractive shirt you're wearing, even though I know people can't see it. It's sort of a Tuscan polenta.
Well, really.
Yes.
It's a great color. It's sort of a light mustard.
Yes. But doesn't Tuscan polenta sound more appetizing?
Max, you and I, yellow.
Well, yellow, but what really stole my heart was the glasses, the aviator shades
really?
You rocked when you came in. Yeah, that was nice.
Wow, nice touch, right?
That was good.
Yeah, he had it going on.
Yes.
Army Navy surplus store. I think that's what you call it.
That's the right place to get them, considering
to the manor born, Sterling.
Ten bucks. Yeah. Yeah.
Best way to do it.
That is.
You go through sunglasses like no one I've
ever
met.
I do every 15 minutes.
Yeah, because you break them.
I break them.
Crazy.
I lose them.
So my big thing is because of my proboscis endowment, as you know, because I'm gifted nasally.
Explain, Lucy. Explain.
I'm nasally gifted, as you know. And I need first of all, I have the offsetting pompadour swoosh. The whole thing is if I have to walk into a wall, the hair has to hit before my nose does. And then I need the sunglasses to offset. Thank you.
I get it. It's like you're telling my story, though.
Oh, but yours is like chiseled. Mine mine looks like it's melted.
Perfectly blocked.
I told you what happened in Italy with the guy with the
the
mask from the Commedia mask. I was in Italy a couple of weeks ago, months ago now. And I went to a store to get a Commedia mask because I love the Pantalone and Dottore, all those masks that they have
in
Venice.
He's speaking Italian right now. Do you know what that is?
The Commedia dell'arte characters, Pantalone and Dottore.
I was
Colombina.
There a couple months ago myself.
Oh, were you?
If we crossed paths, yeah.
Could have been there.
Yeah.
I asked the guy, go in and I say, I'm looking for a Dottore mask because I have a Roman nose and he had a Roman nose. He goes, no, you don't have a Roman nose. You have a Turkish nose. And then he goes to get an example and he gets a gargoyle.
He needs to get a gargoyle in order to illustrate Minos. He has to jump into the world of fantasy in order to illustrate Minos.
He had a bone, to pick or something.
He did. He had more than that. Anyway, Michael, I asked you about your week, and here I'm talking about mine.
No. It was all good. Busy. I'm representing a new show that's getting ready to open. It's the 20th anniversary of Sunset Boulevard from the very day that we opened down at Musical Theater West in Long Beach, California. Oh, have you been down to Musical Theater West?
I think a long time ago.
It's one of the great civic light operas here, for lack of a more current term, but people will understand, in Southern California, probably perhaps one of the most successful, actually. Mm. So it's the 20th anniversary of the show, an Andrew Lloyd Webber show that's coming to fruition on July 12th. So I kind of jumped into that over the weekend. And let's talk about the Tony Awards for a second.
Yeah, just for a little bit, yeah.
Did you see it, guys?
Sure
Tony
did.
Awards, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I was working.
You were working.
I've caught bits and pieces. I was very excited.
Did you have a big flat screen in your trailer? I'm sure you did, didn't you?
I was very excited that Judith won. Judith
Me
Blight,
too. She's a friend
an angel.
Of mine.
Yeah, yes. We've worked together, and
yes,
she's an angel.
2007, you did something.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We did that movie, Save Me, together. Yeah. Produced and acted in it, and she's just
lovely, lovely,
extraordinary,
lady.
And on every level.
A great speech she
every
gave
level.
Too. Very,
very graceful.
And,
yeah.
And I was especially happy to see a Cyndi Lauper win, only because my wife and I, we followed Cyndi Lauper all during the time that, when she wasn't as popular as she later became, the post Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Right.
And interestingly enough, I am from Ridgefield, Connecticut. My family lives in Sandy Hook now, but we lived in Ridgefield. And Harvey Fierstein and Cyndi Lauper both lived in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Harvey still does. Mm. And it's a small town, you know. And I hope this gives her the attention that she deserved. There are like three or four phenomenal albums that she put out, Hatful of Stars. She did a whole bunch of covers of, like, Great American Songbook covers that were fantastic. So, good for
her.
Well, just
judging it, by what we saw on the Tony Awards from that show, I think it looked pretty spectacular, probably most deserving to win, I would think.
And you can just tell she's so passionate when she speaks and just has this art pouring out of her. She's amazing.
I think her career kind of took a leap up after she did that
Celebrity Apprentice. Yes, that's
right?
Where... Yeah,
am I
that's
not
where
sure? Is that right?
No, I think there was, like, the Celebrity Apprentice was a huge launching ground
for
that.
A huge reintro for her.
We're talking about Cyndi,
Cyndi.
Yeah, it's funny because we were actually doing a little, like, Queer's Folk convention on Sunday, and Peter turns and says, okay, no spoilers, but which one of our former guest stars from the show has just won a Tony. Mm. And I was like, we were completely, something that didn't even occur to me.
Oh, was she on Chris?
She was on the show.
Oh, that's
And so
terrible.
It was like one of those, that was the little
what
secondhand
moment. What
did she
play? Do you remember?
She performed in Babylon, in the nightclub, when the bomb went off, when like the sort of hate bomb, she was the part, she was bombed in the whole thing with the rest of us. She's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, incredible.
How about Cicely Tyson's speech, too?
Yeah.
Very
moving.
That was really moving.
Very moving. But you know what? I want to give props to Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes.
I mean,
really.
You know, I correct me if I'm wrong. Someone told me this at lunch the other day, and then we're going to get into Robert's interview here, but that Neil is executive producer now at the Tony Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? So he has a little piece of the action, and it's and that's why he's now hosting it consistently.
I would not be surprised if he hosted the first one, and then part of it was like, because it was so successful even from the word go, and on the next contract is like, yes, I'll host it, but I'm going to take an exec producer
credit. Well, you know what? Very smart boy. Yeah. You know, he's a good actor. Everything he does is good. And to have that kind of material that he did to open that show with and sustain it, and then get the applause.
Comedy, his singing and acting.
I'd give him a Tony for just hanging on to that Tony Award.
Right. It's also quick. Like I love it when hosts can pick up on things that happen during the show and make a joke like a second later.
He does that.
Like it's really impressive. Yeah. It's like that Billy Crystal thing that he does.
Turn on a dime, absolutely. Yeah,
and that's the whole thing. When people watch the Academy Awards, I mean, the first thing I said, well, Neil Patrick Harris, he's no James Franco. Now, I have nothing against James Franco,
of course.
But in terms of the hosting skills, I mean, it's just, I've always said this, it is a completely different animal to host a show.
It's
completely
different
from, it's completely different from stand-up, it's different from acting, you have to be a conduit for the audience, and he's just got the craft down. You know, it just keeps moving. And also, let's remember, too, they are live performers. It's like, oh, the Tonys always move so much faster than the Oscars. Of course they do, because they're live performers, and you're just tapping into what's happening in that room.
Exactly.
And the performances break up all the awards given out, too, really nice.
Right.
Like you're entertained, and then you're a couple awards.
I never thought about that. There's so much more of an immediacy to it, which correlates to the film, where there is that sort of disconnect. There's a stop and start, and it's a whole. There's not the communal aspect.
And it's too much dazzle. It's too much with the live dazzle is one thing, but technical dazzle, which is what they do on the Academy Awards, it does not impedes the action. It doesn't keep it.
Got to have the right amount of dazzle.
Yes, exactly. Give him the old resume.
I think he brought Broadway back to the Tony Awards with this particular year. I
made it cool. Made Broadway cool.
Very nice. Except, I got to say, Matilda looks like a children's touring version of the Pink Floyd's The Wall to me. I mean, I mean, it's just me, but it looks very dark. I mean, maybe that's
good. Oh, I'm sure it is dark.
But the reviews it's been getting has been incredible.
Did you see the last The Wall concert that was at, I believe, Staples Center?
No.
Oh, it was an amazing set. Yeah. Plane flying through the stadium and crashing into the wall built in center court. It's pretty phenomenal.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great.
So, in essence, I'll just cut to the chase here, but thank you for asking. Good week. All of it was good, and the Tony Awards were probably the highlight of the week. So,
and when does your show open?
It opens on the 12th of July.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, coming up.
There
you go. So, Paul, let's get into our wonderful guest here. Though our first guest attended law school at Georgetown University, it was his career as a lawyer that brought him to Los Angeles when he accepted a position with the L.A. office of Chicago-based Baker & McKenzie. The international firm's Los Angeles office was closed soon thereafter, and rather than continue his career in law, he decided to focus all of his time on acting. What's wrong with that picture? I'm not quite sure.
It's not the usual track, you know, that the one follows, is it?
However, he made the right decision because he has certainly become a familiar face on television, having not only co-starred for 5 years on Showtime's Queer as Folk, but in recurring roles on such TV series as Popular and Caroline in the City. He is involved in a number of philanthropic organizations with a great deal of focus going to the issue of aging in the gay community. Please welcome the soon-to-be birthday boy himself, Robert Gant.
I love that, the little metal action.
Just for you.
A little dazzle.
Just for you.
There's a little of our dazzle. We don't have much. I got 9 sound clips, but we'll use them as much
as works.
We can.
It works. Dazzle. It totally works. It's exciting. You know, you feel the heart. Pump a little bit.
You are working
on... Yes, the birthday's
coming. Yeah, birthday is coming. It's a good thing, right?
It is coming. Yeah, the day after you open your thing.
That's right.
Yeah. It's lucky 13. Yeah. Today's the 13th, actually. It's my lucky day. My lucky number. I've always been of the...
20. You know, any big plans? What are you got anything going?
For the birthday?
Yeah.
You know, I've actually been debating whether to do sort of... It's a bigger thing this year. I was out of the country working on a show over in London, Scotland, for my 40th. And to give it all away, but here we go.
No, so this is the 41st.
And then there's that, 45. So this has been the next opportunity to actually maybe do something. It's one of those little mini landmark moments. And so I've been debating whether to actually do a party thing or do... I tend to like a small group of friends and just, you know...
More intimate conversations.
Yeah, connect and really... be with one another.
Because this is
that's odd, because I haven't gotten my invitation yet.
Yeah, that's why I was asking.
I'm still on the fence as to which way we're going to go here.
She'll make a decision after the show.
Oh, okay. We'll see how our play goes and see if I get the invite.
As to just whether it's you or me.
I know. You got to pick one or the other.
Maybe both.
Yeah. And Michael drinks less than I do, so he's a better invite.
I drink.
I drink.
You don't drink at all.
You don't drink at all. Yes, which means it doesn't take much to drink less than I
do. I'm a cheap date.
So, as we mentioned earlier, the Blank Theater does this Young Playwrights Festival, which
phenomenal
is an amazing
festival.
Thing that they do every year. I don't know what year is this?
21st.
21st year.
Yeah.
And the play that you two are involved in, I understand from talking to Max outside that it's an 18-year-old playwright, and he's going to see it tomorrow. He's coming into town
tomorrow. I believe he comes in today from New York, and he's coming to our rehearsal tomorrow. So it's the first time that he'll see it performed and read out loud, and the first time we're meeting him.
Semi-performed. we're very much in the discovery process at this point.
He's quite a talent. Yeah, yeah. No, he got a lot of great buzz from a play he wrote last year at the New York Fringe Film Festival, and it got quite a lot of praise, quite a lot of attention.
A play or a film?
A play. He's a great
the New York Fringe Festival. I thought you said film. Okay.
Oh, sorry. New York Fringe Festival.
Oh, gotcha.
And, he's just he's very mature. He writes very mature, I feel like, for his age. He tackles some very dark things, and he really has a beat on society, humanity.
You.
Yeah.
He's very outspoken. I think it comes from his parents, actually.
I don't know anything about his parents.
Yeah,
his name is Max Friedlich.
What I learned this morning.
Yeah.
He's 18 years old, and I read this thing. I thought, there is no... I'm shocking that an 18-year-old wrote some of this.
What do you think about his parents? I'm very curious.
What about his parents? Well, his parents are very liberal, and they are... anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And in a very constructive, positive, reinforcing kind of way. and he kind of, you know, was liberated early. And I think that's partially why there's the dialogue that you have in your show is flying out there.
And that's
it's true. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Because it really, there's no boundary, really. I mean,
but that drew me to it. That was part of the challenge and excitement. And it's interesting that you say that, because I grew up like that. I was seeing, like, R-rated movies with my dad, you know, at 8 or 9. And it was very much that very liberal household, but with structure.
Right.
You know, it was a very open communication.
The best of both.
It really was.
Which
really,
I think is probably very smart, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, their philosophy was if I could do it at home.
I'm too busy being envious.
No, his philosophy was if I could do it at home and talk about it, you know, at home, whether it's, you know, bad words, cursing, marijuana, whatever, that I wouldn't have the need to go do it outside of the home, and I wouldn't have to sneak it or hide it or rebel. That I could talk about it, and I enjoyed it.
I don't think anything was used gratuitously. That's not what I gleaned from watching him. Actually, I watched a video on him speaking about his work.
Well, tell us about. I'm sorry, Michael. Yeah, tell us about the premise of the show,
please,
if you can.
Yeah.
If you can give us a little synopsis without giving too
much
away.
Black Ice.
Yeah, you know, it's called Black Ice. Again, I don't want to give too much away because there are things that are, you know, revealed. There are things that aren't as they seem at the beginning.
Okay.
There is, so it's sort of an office kind of a setting, and this interrogation-like dynamic happening between the two of us. I guess interrogation. It's a questioning, and it starts to get very revealing, and it goes to, you know, a lot of sexual places, and it really sort of kind of goes all over.
And really tackles religion, sexuality. He really goes there. He covers the gamut, but it's just very great, kind of a boxing match between these two guys.
And
the play is just Robert and I. It's
and you're trying to figure out what really is going on here. I mean, it's one of the characters. You're sort of going along with one of the characters in terms of trying to discover what the heck is happening.
Right. What's the true story?
What is this relationship really?
Okay.
And, which gets revealed and is
And our director, Michael Shepard, shout out to him.
I didn't know Michael directed it.
Michael's directing it. We're seeing him every day, and he's creating a whole world and has a very specific vision to bring Max's play to life. Yeah. And so we're taking the journey with him. And
Is this the show that Michael lost all the tech on? That there was a problem with the tech?
No.
Was
not that I'm aware of.
I don't think so.
We just started another show.
This just began about a week ago. We have about 2 weeks rehearsal.
That's the thing. It's a very tight window to prepare for this.
No, because I'm a Facebook friend of Michael's, and he put something on there about he had a nightmare tech on something.
Might have been Rent.
And then it was lost. Director of Rent.
He just opened a kind of a benefit of Rent or something.
Oh, is that the one that Nita Whittaker's?
Not the one. No,
oh, different.
Hearst is coming up.
Yeah. And he also works for the Celebration Theater, too.
Yeah, so sure.
He's a big player in LA theater, one of those shows.
Which Celebration lost their space, didn't they?
Or
they became nomadic. They're still.
Well, they're becoming nomadic. I mean, they're still there at the moment, but the rent got jacked up to the point where they can't afford it.
Oh, that's right. And I heard that there was something about the neighbors as well and the noise and things were happening.
Nothing to do with Santa Monica Boulevard itself, right?
Of course not.
LA is tough on theaters.
I tell you, though, I keep saying this, Michael, they shouldn't have done that musical, that last show that they did, you know, My Landlord's an Asshole, the musical.
Oh,
you
remember that?
That's always a problem. You know, when you do that, you just take a risk.
At least you did it. At least you were able to do it. That's what
they never really said who the landlord was.
You don't need to. You just need to know that he did that, and then, you know, and you know he doesn't listen to this show because he's not interested in the arts.
Michael Shepard is a very, very talented
singer.
Man.
Yeah.
He's great.
And have you ever heard him sing?
I have heard him sing. We actually did a couple of stage readings together of a Terrence McNally play called Some Men.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of little benefit performances, and he sang in that show, and I got it.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's
totally
awesome. He's got a booming voice there.
Yes, he does. Ask Michael, next time you see Michael, just ask him a story about the white pants.
That's
all you have to say. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right.
I'm going to call it right after we leave this off.
And for any of you who are listening to our show, go back on our archive at stateoftheartsla.com. Look for when Michael appeared on the show. Go to the end of the archived show and hear the story about the white pants.
That's all you're going to say.
That's all I'm going to say. Let them do their own legwork through the archives. I'm not retelling it. Anyway.
But anyway, we're excited for folks to come and check out the play. It's really something. It's something cool. It's something special. And I was really impressed with it when I read it and got immediately excited to take part.
And we should put the info out there so people can do just that. This is the Blank Theater's Young Playwright Festival. This is from June 6th to the 30th, and There are celebrity guest hosts, we should add. Thursday, June 6th, was our friend Virginia Madsen, who we've had on the show before. Friday, June 7th, these have already happened, haven't they?
The ones you're citing, yeah.
The ones I'm citing, yes. Yeah. But now,
but Virginia Madsen's a
great
name.
Oh, here we go. Okay, there we go. Okay,
this weekend, I guess one opens tonight.
Yes,
right?
We have John Kassir tonight, and then tomorrow John Huertas, Gail Harold, and then Sunday, June 16th, a woman who I know from the old Jenny Jones days, Mackenzie Phillips. I met her when I was warming up the crowds for the Jenny Jones show in Chicago, and she was very sweet and very nice. We did
she's one of those stars
of the 70s things, and she's a doll.
So yeah, Gail is doing the one tonight?
He's not in it.
I thought he was just going to be a guest appearing.
Gail is Saturday, June 15th.
He's a host, isn't he?
I thought he was...
Yes, these are celebrity guest hosts.
Got it. Award to the writer, do the pictures.
Right. And oddly enough, next week, all Rip Taylor. Every night.
Oh, really?
No, I'm just kidding. But next week is Robert and I. Yeah, we open in 1 week. We do Thursday through Saturday.
Oh, June 20th.
So the 23rd. Uh-huh. So you get, on June 20th, Constance Zimmer.
Okay.
And then Jim Beaver. Didn't we have Jim Beaver on the show?
Oh, I thought you said June Beaver.
What? No. June Cleaver.
Excuse me.
There's a joke in there somewhere.
There is a joke in there. And actually, the following weekend, Scott Lowell is...
We love Scott.
Scott Lowell.
The final weekend.
Free house breaking wee-wee pads with every purchase. There's a whole story attached to that, but we'll...
We need to tell people how they can go see this.
Yeah, do you have it in front of you?
I do.
I'm not prepared.
It's very, very simple. It's at the Stella Adler Theater, which is at 6773 Hollywood Boulevard in Hollywood, California. And, of course, the show that we're talking about is Black Ice, and that is on stage June 20th through the 23rd with Robert Gant and Max Adler. And, folks, each week's program includes three plays, and tickets are $20 for adults, $14 for students, and festival passes, which you can get, which is one ticket for each week, so that gets you all three shows.
Oh, wow.
$64. How can you go wrong with that?
How many shows is that for $64?
Three shows.
No, it's three nights.
Or three nights.
Yeah. So it's three shows a night, so it's nine shows.
Right.
So you break that down.
That's right. Well,
it's making you do
three,
math.
Three different
quick.
Shows per weekend. So yep. I think the passes you get to see each weekend, you get to go. But all the plays are great. They're all written by kids, 18 and younger, from all around the nation. Ours is, it's very thought-provoking. Yeah. It'll get people thinking, get people talking, self-reflecting. I love to come and check it out.
Yeah, we were coming into rehearsal, and actually one of the shows up our night is being directed by Barbara Bain. So it should be kind of...
Wow, we love Barbara.
Yeah.
Barbara Bain, yes. She
was very sweet.
And tickets, folks, may be purchased by visiting theblank.com or by calling 323-661-9827.
Who is it? Warren Davis has done a ton of work at The Blank, and he's done a lot of sound design for the shows there. And Noel Wiley is still actively involved.
I think he's been very involved for quite a while, which has been a big boon to the theater. It's such a great group. Daniel Henning over there as well.
Of course.
We've had him on. Yeah.
He's fantastic. Love Daniel. We're just really starting to connect more deeply. He's just a great guy, and he really works his butt off.
Yes,
there,
he does.
So.
And they have Peter Pan going on right now.
What's that?
Peter Pan's at the Blank Theater right now, I believe, too. Right?
I know. I really
getting
want to
extended
see that.
Again.
Is
yeah,
it?
He's getting these great reviews.
Because his publicist wrote me a little note about it.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Nothing but I'm great things about that. It. We see the set. The set's
Peter
pretty
Pan
phenomenal.
At the...
The Blank. Second stage?
The second stage.
Yeah.
Okay, because they have the two spaces now, right?
You're right.
Second stage on Santa Monica Boulevard and Wilcox.
That's the one on the corner, yeah.
Yes, on the corner.
This is a new adaptation of the story.
Of Peter Pan?
Yeah, from a different point of view.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Sounds,
right, Kenny?
Right, isn't the boy who hit his mother or something
yes,
like that?
Yes.
There's
exactly.
some exciting theater.
Yeah,
all
it, it digs in there.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
very cool.
And Michael Matthews, our friend, is directing that show.
Oh,
yeah.
Very cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Peter Pan, the boy who hated his mother.
That's right.
Wow.
He directed that show, and he's getting ready right now. He's in casting for Funny Girl.
Huh.
Down at 3D Theatricals, who does brilliant. They do brilliant work. So.
You know what offshoot here. You know what that reminds me of? You know when they take American films and they send them to different markets and they have to retitle them because a lot of times there's not an equivalent in the particular
language. That just happened with a film I did.
Really?
Yeah,
what was it?
It's called AWOL. And it was this whole Vietnam love story war
but
drama.
But of course
and
they had
AWOL doesn't translate to anything but the American acronym. So they changed it to Love and Honor.
Love
the two
and
words
honor.
That carry across the world. Yeah, they changed it. Because of that, that's exactly what we just
Well,
went
this
through.
is what made me think of this because they took Psycho and they brought Psycho to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's no word for Psycho, you know, there's nothing to abbreviate, and they gave away the entire film by titling it The Boy Who Thought He Was His Mother.
Oh. Wow.
So it's right on the outside of the packages. The boy who, no surprise ending in this now. So but just the Peter Pan boy who hated his mother made me think of that. If you're wondering where my synapses are.
I might have the byline wrong. It's something like that.
Yeah.
That's something like
that. It's not a prance through the tulips, is what you're saying.
It digs
it's
in.
It's got
a dark
edge to it.
A little bit of darkness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Black Ice.
Like Black Ice.
Black Ice gets pretty dark.
And Psycho. Yeah. And The Bates Motel, which is a great show.
I wonder
how
Psycho would be received in what'd you say, Korea?
There was no story.
That in itself is a little dangerous, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. Why do you say that?
I don't know.
You're Korean people are more inclined to hack people up
kooky.
In the shower? Is
they're
that
a little kooky, I think. Yeah.
Well, we had a kooky Korean on our show, Suzanne Wong.
Well, yes, but she's a very funny, very special lady.
She has a very great picture floating around the internet now because she had, she had a mastectomy.
Yes.
And she did a whole surgery thing, and they took a picture, and it's sort of like an empowering thing, and it's all over the internet right now, and she's really getting a lot of accolades for her bravery and her
good for her.
Funny,
she deserves it.
Funny woman.
You remember
funny
her
woman.
From? She was host of.
She was host of House
Fox
Hunt,
and Friends.
House Hunters
first,
for years.
And then,
But she's she was on Las Vegas, and she's a
House
stand-up.
Hunters, the original House Hunters.
Filthy, absolutely filthy. One of the funniest.
Tell the
I've
joke.
Ever seen.
Tell the joke.
Uh-oh.
You got to tell the joke.
Which one?
That she tells.
I don't
about
know.
About the Korean woman that comes.
You got to tell it now.
Oh no! Yeah,
the mother.
Oh no, I don't remember it.
You don't? You
no,
do.
No.
Do you remember?
Go back in our archives again, look for Suzanne Wong, you'll hear it there.
It is so hilarious.
It's
so disrespectful. That's why it's funny.
We should
like
do our
Black Eyes.
We should. Yeah. Guest director, Dr. Timothy Selig of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus will lead the 200 plus member Los Angeles Gay Men's Chorus in another memorable evening, this season titled Not Entirely Wicked, featuring stage songs and medleys from The Baker's Wife, Children of Eden, Godspell, The Magic Show, and Pippin, and yes, of course, Wicked, along with screen favorites Enchanted, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Pocahontas and the Prince of Egypt on June 22nd and 23rd at 8 p.m. at the spectacular Saban or Saban. Now, have we ever decided how to say the name of this theater?
I don't know.
I like Saban.
Saban, I think so. Okay. Saban Theater in Beverly Hills.
I think it's Saban.
It's
Dumas.
It's the Saban Theater.
And he's a lawyer.
Alexander Dumas.
It's Dumas.
Saban, yeah. Chaim Saban.
Excuse me. Special guest star composer from Broadway, Stephen Schwartz, will also appear in the performance, in a piano performance, actually, debuting Testimony. His new choral work about teens struggling to come to terms with their sexuality and thoughts of suicide. This newest piece was inspired by the It Gets Better project, and is Schwartz's most revealing and emotional piece to date. And I know, Max, that you have worked with that that group, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, too. And, Paul, you were out seeing the theater last night. You
give them the ticket information, Michael.
Oh, yes, of course. Tickets can be, tickets, again, are very inexpensive for this event, $20, and may be purchased by visiting www.gmcla.org or by calling the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles at their event line 424. An interesting but new area code. I checked it out. It is specific to Los Angeles, 2390514. Once again, 2384-238-6514. Or you can visit the Performing Arts
Unless, of course, it's a prime number and the moon is in the seventh house, in which case you'll have to nod twice to the east, turn
and
around
Venus.
To
you know what? It's none of those things that I just said. This is what it is.
Okay.
424-239-6514.
Okay. There we go.
It comes from these cheap glasses I'm wearing.
That's it. Well, or that happens when you buy them at the Army-Navy store.
Or you can visit
the $10 glasses. Yeah. Come on now.
Visit PerformingArtsLive.com, our sponsor, of course. It will have every detail about that.
As
they always do.
Yes. We're going to chat with Max in a short minute.
Yes,
I just
we
want
are.
To chat a little bit about, yes, Prime Minister. But I'm actually not going to talk about it very much today.
Yeah.
There's a very, very favorable review.
Oh, good.
But the thing is, next week we're actually going to have the director on, so it'd be a good time to just talk to him about it, since I'm only going to say positive things about his production. It'd be nice to sort of get his input.
That'd be smart of you at this juncture.
Yeah. It would be. And but the thing is, I tell you, in addition to being a great show, and I'm a big Michael McKean fan, and Michael McKean plays the Prime Minister, and it's very, very funny and very, very urbane and very verbal and a lot of wordplay, but yet it's that smart silly. It's sort of Monty Python smart silly,
yeah.
You know, where it can get a little ridiculous, but it's got some brains behind the smiles. But I have to give it to the cast on opening night, because there was a major sickness or illness or in the audience disaster
really?
That happened about maybe two-thirds of the way through Act One.
Wow.
Enough of a disruption that everyone in one aisle got up.
Wow.
This is a whole aisle at the Geffen, uh-huh. or three-quarters of an aisle, got up, moved out. People came in. They helped some person out.
And so during the performance?
During the performance. And then when we went out at intermission, there was ambulances and paramedics outside.
Holy
cow. There was obviously some sort of illness or sickness or whatever. They did not miss a beat. And as an actor, and I'm sure these two gentlemen can attest to this, you as well, Michael, you notice that shit. You see that. When you're on stage, there's no way you don't pick up on that. You didn't detect a ruffled feather. You didn't detect anyone had missed a beat. And I had such respect for those people, in addition to it enjoying the show fully, to see actors so on top of their game to not be rattled by something.
So they
like
continued
that.
The performance
without
during this?
Missing
I see.
A beat.
I see. Well,
that's incredibly
impressive.
Yeah,
it
is.
Especially because
the
whole audience then becomes aware of it, and no one's even looking at the stage anymore. And
I tell you, though,
so hard.
As a performer, though, I'm sitting there, and I felt myself intentionally not watching it. I was like, I'm going to stay focused on this play, because if they look out at me, I want them to see me looking back at them.
Right.
Because you feel for them. We've all been there.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. I did my show at the Players Theater in New York, and I had a bachelorette party in the back that threw up entirely on the row in front of them.
Mm.
You don't bounce back from that one very
quick.
But anyway, so we'll talk about Yes, Prime Minister next
nice
week.
Nice imagery, Paul.
Thank you. You like the way I left that?
I do.
Yeah. But let's throw the information out there, though. This is at the Geffen. This is Yes, Prime Minister. It is the U.S. premiere of the smash hit West End comedy, and it's written by Jonathan Lynn and Anthony Jay, and the production is helmed by Mr. Lynn, and it opened last night, June 12th, at the Geffen.
Yeah.
GeffenPlayhouse.com.
Indeed.
All right.
Go see it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see it. I was supposed to be there last night, as you know, but I had my own little thing going on at
I know.
The house.
He had the bachelor party.
I was highly
he was in the back throwing up on you.
He was. That's
right. Max, don't start with me now.
He's about to read your intro.
I don't know. All right.
Take it, Michael, would you?
Get out.
After various roles in a number of productions, our next guest was cast in a minor recurring role in the Fox television series Glee as school jock and bully Dave Karofsky. Glee creator Ryan Murphy was so impressed with his acting and wanted to write more for him and with him in mind, and that he did in the November 2010 episode Never Been Kissed, written to tackle the issue of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth bullying. Following an outpouring of praise by viewers of the episode, he told the viewers the following. This is a quote from Max. "Most bullies are extremely insecure and want to knock you down a peg to feel better about themselves. So being who you are is what's awesome. It makes you feel special, interesting, fun to talk to, and desirable. He is a gentleman, and he is here to talk about his career and other matters of importance. Please welcome Max Adler."
Woohoo!
That's all I got.
Oh, I'm waiting for my journey guitar.
There you go. You deserve that.
I know that was from the joke earlier.
Yes, exactly.
Sure,
you needed a little dig on
full circle.
No,
just sure. I was waiting for it.
Consider yourself lucky that I didn't use this one.
It may still come.
I was. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I got my
Don't
finger on the button.
You watch yourself.
Yeah. I got my finger on the button.
So Max,
yes,
you started acting when? When? How old were you?
Oh boy, the first musical I did was Jesus Christ Superstar when I was like 10. I was in the ensemble in a small town in Arizona called Fountain Hills. So really my whole life, you know.
So music was a part of your
music
growing up.
Was a big part of growing up. My dad and mom always played music in the house, and I was very musically inclined.
You from Arizona originally?
Yeah, yes. Born in New York, born in Queens, but raised in Arizona. Okay. I moved to Arizona when I was like 1. So Arizona's the hometown.
And it was there that you were in a choral group similar to Glee,
yes,
right?
Yes, very similar. My high school, I did show choir. choir, jazz choir. I did, you know, all the musicals, the plays. I was very, very into the drama program.
An extensive drama program.
It was. It was. We traveled. We went to the Bahamas, Chicago, San Francisco. It was full on costumes. All the moms would get together, raise the money, sew the costumes, and we'd go around the nation. And it was pretty serious.
I lived in Richfield. You know where we went? Stamford. And we had to drive ourselves.
I was very lucky. It was.
I did the whole sort of deal with all the choirs and everything else.
I
was an a cappella guy for many, many years. Yeah, I was in a...
That's why I can't imagine you went to law school, because I was just like, what else am I going to do now? I love it too much.
I think I was in like four or five performing and mostly singing groups in high school, and then a 12-man a cappella group, which is why I just am an a cappella freak, you know, in undergrad. And then even in law school, we had an a cappella group for a number of years. And we started one out here.
You ever hear of a rockapella?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. It's so funny. So many of these mixes that we see now, you know, we were doing way back when, and then mm-hmm. you know, they get publicized and known more broadly as if they just happened.
They just rename it. Oh, they're mashups now.
Right. Right. This is mashups. Right. They've been happening forever.
I think that's a term, mashup, that came from that series.
But what I'm saying is just it's not particularly new. It's just renamed, like you said.
Exactly. Did you do a lot of musicals as well?
Yeah, did Anything Goes, The Music Man, Grease,
Joseph. Did you do
Joseph.
Music Man?
I sure did.
When did you do Music Man?
My sophomore year of high school, I was one of the quartet.
Well, you know, I'll share one little thing, because it's the one heartbreaking moment.
We'll save that for the end.
I save the heartbreaking moment?
You have to save it for the
end. All right. Yeah. I mean, I can say something funny at the end.
Oh,
all right. It's a Music Man thing.
Okay.
That was my dream role my whole life, was to play Harold Hill, you know, since I was a kid. I mean, I was just in love with that role, and I knew it. And I was out here, and they were doing the first national touring company, The Music Man, and you know, Susan Stroman was, you know, directing back in New York and the whole thing, and I think Craig Bierker was doing it, and they loved me for it. They flew me out. I met with Susan Stroman. It was this extraordinary thing, and at the end of it, she said, "You're going to be wonderful on the tour. Congratulations!" And I just walked out of the room and just cried, you know. And then, within the next couple of weeks, found out that they were making that a non-equity tour.
Uh-oh.
They were doing that whole thing that they did with King and I.
Yeah.
You know, with Barry Williams and all that, where he, you know, I guess got rid of his card and, you know, whatever. So I was on the phone with the, you know, heads of equity and everything else, and it was going to go through my hometown. It was, you know, it was the most, it was my dream, you know. And then, you know, I had to ultimately let it go. You know, they offered. They said, you know, we'll pay for you to rejoin your union. You know, every sort of nasty
so close
thing.
Every caveat that got them out of workman's comp and all the other things.
But the good news is that within a month I got Queer as Folk.
And everything happens for a reason.
Had that happened, it's just one of those things.
You're but right. Anyway, you never know.
Music
You're
Man
right.
was sort of the big anyway.
Yeah.
So what were your other shows?
Those were the big musicals I did. Did a lot of plays. The Liar, You Can't Take It With You. Anyway, I did a lot in high school, and that was I didn't know what else I would really want to do. And I came here right after high school to L.A. and went for it.
Any other performance history in your family? Anyone else interested in it? Or
not really. My mom was a dancer. She went to Tisch, at NYU, and was very into ballet.
That's why you have liberal parents.
Oh, they're New York liberal teachers. Yeah, for sure. Very liberal. Yeah. But she got Hodgkin's when she was in her mid-20s, and she stopped dancing, and then that was it. But otherwise, no other actors, performers, dancers. My dad's a huge athlete, went to college on a full-ride, you know, soccer scholarship.
Holy cow.
But both me and my little brother are not big into I play for fun, but I never wanted to be, like, the pro athlete. So it came as a shock to him, but he's behind me 100%. He totally supports me.
They must be very proud.
Well, now, may I say something? This is on a more serious note. I think if in my research on you that you've lost your mom, right?
I did.
And your grandmother.
Both.
And the cause is muscular dystrophy. Related.
Muscular dystrophy, and my mom also had other, like, Lyme disease and just bad immune system issues. But
God bless her.
But yeah, no, thank you. I was 17. I was in high school. It was unexpected. And that was really, you know, when something like that happens, it changes the way you kind of see the world and think about things day to day. And that really was the impetus for me just to go for it and come to LA and do what I wanted to do, because who knows how long any of us have, and when no one's promised tomorrow, and so that really changed my whole outlook, and it got me out here. And
well, how proud she and your grandmother must be of you now.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was actually, you know, it was her idea for me to come to LA and go for it without going to college. And I told her that that's crazy. No one, you know, you're supposed to go to college. That's what you do. But then she passed in the midst of all the college applications and the acceptances and all that, and it really just influenced me just to do it, you know, to honor her and to do it for me, and I felt compelled.
Well, and you have honored her.
That's a nice force to be driving you to do something that you love and she loved for him. So tell us about, how did you get the break on Glee? How did this happen? Because this is obviously life-changing.
It was life-changing. It took a while. It was a while. You know, there's 4 years of struggling and working doubles, doing, you know, valet work and restaurant work and, you know, paying the bills months late and going overdrawn and all that. And I had done little co-star, guest star roles on different shows, Ghost Whisperer, What About Brian, little indie films for $100 a day. And then Glee came as just an audition for a co-star. You know, it was a one-episode thing. Hmm. But I had dreamed about something like this because I was a huge fan of Ryan Murphy from Popular, which Robert did, and as well as Nip Tuck, which was my favorite show.
Yeah.
So for Ryan Murphy to do a show about show choir, which was so fresh in my life, I was like, this is insane. And I went out for the bully role. I auditioned for two roles. There was like a hockey player and a football player. It was like two paragraphs for each character. And I read it. And then in the room, Robert Ulrich at UDK Casting, he told me in the room when I finished, he's like, "You're our choice for this role." And which is amazing, because as actors, you never hear that.
You never hear that.
You have no idea what they say, what they think, if you're the right guy, if you're the right, whatever. Right. So that was very cool, and then 2 days later I heard and I got it, and then I shot, and Ryan Murphy's there in the hallways of McKinley High, and it's like this most surreal experience, and you know, driving through the arches of Paramount, going to work, I was like, oh my gosh. But then
you
I did
know
five.
You've arrived when you
well,
those
except
arches,
five
right?
episodes later, I'm still working at a restaurant because the money isn't that good at first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's that weird back and forth of, you know, oh, you know, can I get you anything, Mr. Adler? You need some water? Can I iron your shirt for you? And the next day I'm like, oh, can I refill your lemonade, sir? Like, can I get you some more fries? Do you want them? I was like, so weird, you know. And you start going a little crazy. And but luckily, you know, Glee kept going and they kept writing for the character. And then
you were a mean son of a gun on that show.
I was, yeah. I was.
For being as nice as you were.
I got to say, you know.
Well, bullies aren't known for their soft set.
It was actually really great casting in that regard because, you know, he at first glance, you know, he's a big kind of imposing guy. But the truth is, I mean, as you've been able to tell thus far, I mean, you have an incredible heart. And they really get to that ultimately in the character, I guess, by revealing and his, you know, what's really kind of going on underneath. It was a little prescient, I think, the casting.
It was kind of a dream role. I mean, because the thing is, it's like, it had that breakdown for that role have come out, you know, in the future, say, you know, saying that he's a closeted homosexual bully who makes fun of because of all that, I never would have even gone in for it.
They
would have seen
someone
that
at the start,
it wasn't that to begin with, and it was really, you know, kudos to the writers, you know, Ryan Murphy, Brad Falchuk, Ian Brennan, to see that happening in the world, because at that point when that story was written, that's when, you know, it was so prevalent, and, you know, Anderson Cooper covered it every night, and Ellen, and you know, all the teen suicides and the bullying started coming to the forefront of conversations, and then the cyberbullying took a hit, and so Glee was on it, and they tackled it, and I mean, fortunately, they kind of used me as a vessel to tell that story, which definitely did change my life, in that it allowed me to, you know, act and fulfill my dreams while telling meaningful stories and putting good messages out into the world.
Right.
And so it was quite a dream come true.
Well, and the nice thing is you've continued to do that.
I have.
You've continued to be a proactive person with people that are less
fortunate
or appear less fortunate. They're really not, but...
Well, I guess I feel a responsibility because it's like I've been able to fulfill something that I've wanted, and I see other people, friends of mine, peers that aren't able to go for their dreams or do what they want because of a lack of support, either financially or emotionally. And so I feel like whatever I can do now to give back, and you know, I think Kevin Spacey said that great quote about, you know, if you're lucky enough to get the elevator up, you know, make sure you send it back down, and that kind of thing. And so, you know, in the middle of kind of that riding high off the Glee wave, there's that like, well, now what can I do to like help everyone else out? And so, yeah, so I contacted the Muscular Dystrophy Association and said I had this history with my family, and is there anything I can do to help? And then I went to Tucson, Arizona, where their headquarters are, and I met with all the scientists and the doctors and learned about all the research, and so now I've been an advocate for them, and I do walks around the nation and raise money, as well as, It Gets Better campaign. They reached out to me after the episode in the locker room, and I went to D.C. and shot an It Gets Better video and spoke at the Kennedy Center.
You spoke out at the Kennedy Center.
For the Anti-Defamation League.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Do you have any websites you can throw out, some URLs you could throw out for the listeners?
Well, you can go itgetsbetter.org, Trevor Project. Trevor Project's great, too. You check them out. That's 24-hour suicide prevention hotline for people to reach out to if they don't feel like there's anyone to turn to in their
Trevor Project's amazing.
Family. It's fantastic. Yep. As well as musculardystrophy.com, MDA.org. And the specific form of muscular dystrophy that my family suffered from was called FSH, fascioscapulohumeral. So it attacks the shoulders and the face. And so you can go to FSH.org, and I do a lot specifically with them. So, yeah, you can go to any of those sites and learn more.
Good to know. You are a cool guy.
Right back at you.
I like you. Cool. I like you. But I want to ask you a question, and then we're going to get into the remaining minutes of the show.
We have 5 minutes.
We do. I just want to say, Black Ice, what's it like working with this guy?
Oh, you said
far?
Black Ice. I thought you were just like, Black Guys.
Great. Speaking of.
About? That's another show. Yeah.
What a segue. Yeah.
Speaking of.
So anyway, Black Guys.
You just
what
made
are you
our
thinking of
that? Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Black Ice, yes.
I'm very lucky to be able to work with Robert. I don't even know if I told you this. The first question I asked my agents before taking on the role, I knew I liked the play, but I wanted to see who the other guy is in the play.
Yeah.
And I asked, and they said it was Robert. And
did
I
you ask for approval?
No. I did. Never would. Never had that chance. But no. And I found out it was Robert, and I was stoked. He was like, I saw the resume. I knew his work. I knew it, his face, and I was like, this is perfect. And then meeting him, it was great too, because Robert had said earlier, I have a big heart, but really, this guy is one of the most caring people you'll ever meet. He's very, when people ask you like, how you doing today, or what's going on, like he means it, and he's genuinely concerned, and he's compassionate, and cares what you have to say, which is nice. And he's patient, it's a very grueling process to have 2 weeks to tackle over 40 pages.
Yeah, well, and, it's a testament to how good of an actor you are and how focused you must be.
He helps incredibly. He's very, it's nothing but great.
So one more time, ladies and gentlemen, Black Ice, part of the Young Playwrights Festival here in Los Angeles, and that play being written by Max Friedlich. Friedlich? Is that how you say his name?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes. Age 18 and directed by our friend Michael Shepard. Performs June 20th to the 23rd, starring Max Adler and Robert Gant. And here's a little tagline. Love makes us do crazy things, including falling for someone we'd never expect to, but it's really love. Is that so wrong? So attending the Blank Theater's Young Playwrights Festival, it's very easy. Stella Adler Theater is hosting these plays between now and the 30th of June. 6773 Hollywood Boulevard. Each week's program includes three plays. As I said earlier, tickets are $20 for adults, $14 for children. You can get students, excuse me. You can get them by simply visiting theblank.com or by calling 323-661-9827.
I just want to say also how fantastic it's been to get to work with this man. He's such a you don't know when you're coming into this kind of a process, because it's really a sparring match. And it's exciting when someone is so clearly as excited as you are, and we're trying to wrestle it down to the ground.
Especially with a two-hander, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Well, and just think, if you don't know someone at all, and then all of a sudden you're with them like 6 hours a day for like 2 weeks, it can be
such a relief, because
so
he's got the fire, and it's
concentrated time.
That's a nice thing to say about someone that you like to go to work with, right? Yeah. That you actually like to work with,
right?
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have 2 minutes left. Oh. We want to give each of you 1 minute to relate a story about the funny onstage disaster. Robert, you want to start?
You start. Let me just think for a second.
Okay, I was doing Grease my senior year of high school, and one of the numbers, I'm dancing with a girl, at the hop or whatever the dance was. And
shaking at the high school hop.
Shaking at the high school hop. Thank you. That's great. And so my partner, the girl, had to do like a toe touch, the splits in the air. And somehow her knee like connects with my nose, and at the end of the number, blood comes out of both nostrils. And I have to go on as one of the T-Birds like the very next number. So I'm freaking out. We're like, what do we say? Just make something up about how I got into a fight. Something like, say something that I just got punched. And my best friend Danny Max, he was playing Kanicki. He goes, no, dude. And he gets this Vaseline. He fills up fingers of Vaseline. He plugs my nose with Vaseline and like stops the bleeding. And I go out on stage and we do this whole number with Vaseline and blood.
Oh my!
Never, it was just I was like, you are my best friend.
Did you get away with it?
Awesome. We got away with it. No one knew. It was. We still laugh about it to this day because it was the most intense 5 seconds of like blackout to light and I'm bleeding. It's what do you do? And you know. And there was Vaseline, somehow, and he plugged my nose, and we went on with the show.
Oh man,
that's like a theater.
It's a theatrical MacGyver.
What
do you got?
Exactly.
I was trying to think. The only thing I can really think of that sort of jumps to mind was doing Little Shop of Horrors in at Penn in undergrad, and I played the dentist, and the dentist has like I think 9 roles of you, including a voice not unlike God's, and in Meek Shall Inherit, there's that quick change. With the 3 characters,
and
I had never done drag before in my life, and the second character was Mrs. Luce, and he just sort of brother, and I ran out, and I had no idea that the boobs had just come out, and they were hanging outside of the dress, and
it's a good look.
Quite honestly, we could never. I think I hadn't yet sort of dug into my gay card just yet, and Mrs. Luce was a constant disaster in terms of the boob thing. They could never quite get it down, and
so not only are the boobs outside the dress, they're artificial boobs
outside. And they didn't get shoes. Like I wear size 13 and the shoes were like really small, it was sort of the whole thing was a costume disaster. But it was fun.
If there was ever a time for boobs to fall out of a dress,
that was inspiration for kinky boots.
Exactly, there you go.
We are out of time. Gentlemen, what a pleasure having both of you on.
Pleasure to be on here.
Pleasure
to be here.
You guys have a great vibe, great energy.
Thank you so much.
Michael, thank you.
And as always, it's a good sharing the mic with you, and we will see you next week.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.